welcome back as we continue with Genesis on a Monday here. And we are in the 30th chapter, about halfway through or so. And kind of an interesting story today. We get a few chapters here where we'll focus on the relationship between Jacob and Laban. Rachel and Leah will be somewhat involved in that, but primarily it will be a kind of highlight of a little bit of tension between Jacob and Uncle Laban. It's not clear that that begins at the wedding, though it couldn't have helped the relationship when Laban pawned off his older daughter on Jacob, who hadn't asked for her. But he also got 7 years of work out of it. It's possible that there's bad blood going in, though we really haven't had that impression. There's been nothing that has indicated that. However, today we see a little bit of tension growing, and it's family tension. So let me jump in here, verse 25 of chapter 30, and we'll go for a while. When Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own house, my own home and country. Give me my wives and children for whom I've served you, and let me go, for you know the service I've given you." But Laban said, "If you allow me to say so, I've learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." Jacob said, "You yourself know that I've served you, how your cattle have fared with me. For you've had little before I came, and it's increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have turned. Now, when shall I provide for my own household?" He said, "What do you want? What should I give you?" Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. Do this for me. I will again feed your flock and keep it. Let me pass through your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and those will be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look at my wages. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be considered stolen." Laban said, "Good, let it do as you have said." But that day, Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, everyone that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob while Jacob was pasturing the rest of the flock. So a long reading there. Let's just recap what's happening. Jacob wants to leave. Laban says, "Look, I think good things have happened while you're here. I think the Lord blesses you and through you has blessed me. I want you to stay. Name your wages." Jacob says, "Well, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to build my own flocks, and I'll take the second class sheep. I'll take the spotted ones. I'll take the striped ones. I'll take the black ones, the goats. I'll just take all of those. And that way, if there's any that aren't that in my flock, you'll know that I have stolen them and that I didn't deserve them. And you can even consider them stolen." And Laban agrees. And this is Jacob's way of essentially saying, "Split your flocks with me. I'll take the less desirable animals. And you'll know for sure that we are keeping the bargain because it's visibly obvious if we break it."
It is a really interesting kind of amplification of some of the conflict we've already seen. The theme of tricking one another has been clear. Jacob, clearly in the early stories, was the one supremely adept at doing that in his family of origin. Now he's with Uncle Laban, who's got a little bit of the tit for tat. He's got the ability to come back, and Jacob has been tricked by that, certainly with his two wives. And now we see in this story, there's already a buildup to the next round. Here we have the setup where we're going to have the flocks being separated with the agreement of who gets to keep what. And we see that here, Laban's already got a plan of how he can both keep Jacob and the blessing that he's been bringing, that Laban says he's divined or he's come to know spiritually. And his thought is, I get to both keep the treasure and I get to keep the blessing. I'm winning. Of course, what we're going to see as this text moves forward is there's a lot more in store here for that trickster as Jacob sort of moves into his own. This is sort of his battlefield, his playing ground. And this is an interesting theme of the Old Testament, Clint, that I don't think we don't emphasize this in Sunday school, or we don't talk to our kids about this when we're talking about some of these, fathers of the faith kinds of stories. This is a really interesting, almost, it's not political, so I can't call it a political thriller, but it does have a little bit of that back and forth, what's going to happen, edge of your seat kind of nature to it.
Yeah, Middle Eastern culture and literature loves this kind of one-upsmanship, a kind of shrewdness, let's call it. It's right on the edge of dishonesty, but it's more really forcing any advantage. I know people that have served on businesses for businesses in the Middle East, and they say this is typical, that there's just a kind of aggressiveness to the negotiations and an endeavor to kind of take advantage of any opportunity. And that's what it is here. And so we see this in Laban. This is very close to unethical. Laban says, yeah, okay, you can have all the spotted sheep, the striped goats, you can have all those things. But before Jacob gets to the flocks, he has his people pull them all out and gives them to his sons and takes them 3 days away so that Jacob can't have access to them. He kind of... He tries to one-up Jacob. He tries to take advantage of him. You know, he's kind of done that with his daughter. Now he tries to do that with his flocks. And again, is this cheating? Yeah, it's not 100% ethical. Is it morally wrong? It's probably a gray area. Some would say this is good business. He's just being shrewd. Others would say, no, it's beyond shrewd. He's probably doing something that seems out of line, but he does it. And you would think then that puts Jacob in a bad place, but then let's read the rest of the story. Jacob took fresh rods of poplar, almond, and plane and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white flesh of the rods. He set the rods he peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places, when the flocks came in to drink. And since they bred when they came in for drinks, the flocks bred in front of the rods, so the flocks produced young that were striped, speckled, and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped and completely black animals in the flock of Laban, and he put his own droves apart. And he did not put them with Laban's flock. When the strongest of the flock were breeding, Jacob laid the rods in the troughs before their eyes, and the feebler of the flock, he did not lay the rods in there. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger were Jacob's. Thus the man grew exceedingly rich, had large flocks, and male and female slaves, camels and donkeys. So God isn't mentioned in this text, but clearly anyone who's raised animals knows that it is likely not a factor if they're looking at striped poles when they breed. That will likely have nothing to do with their offspring. But here, that's Jacob's scheme, and it works. We're not told that it works because of God, but if you read this text and you knew something about animals, you'd have to say, well, there's more going on here than that. That's not a thing. That's not a practice. That's not genetics. That wouldn't work. Well, it does work, and Jacob uses this practice to strengthen his own. Now, is he doing anything wrong? We'd probably say no, I don't think that he's doing anything unethical. He's got this sort of trick that he's using. Is he giving himself the most advantage out of it? Yes. Is it unethical, especially given that Laban tried to take flocks away from him? Probably not. It may be a little uncomfortable, the whole thing, but the short version is, as Jacob usually does, he comes out on top. It works in his favor, and he gets exceedingly rich.
Yeah, so I think those are the two themes that are worth pulling out of this, Clint. The first is that God is always active, even when God is not explicitly named. And that is a really nuanced part of the Old Testament literature, that God is this character who goes throughout these books. These individuals who are the human characters of this text. They all have very interesting personas, challenges. There's some shared themes throughout, of course, but God is always written underneath. So to name that's happening here, I think that's incredibly helpful. And I think that is being an astute reader of the text. If you had inherited this text from the original authors, you would have understood that this is pointing to something more than just animals breeding. So you see how God lives in the text. But the other thing is, you know, the Old Testament represents human action, consequence, and the natural sort of causality as being a fact of life. So the fact that one person is using means which may be or may not be ethical, it really leaves that to the mind of the reader. That really isn't the thing that matters. Fundamentally, what matters in the text is that as these people are engaged in this kind of duel for the top, in this case, for who's going to have the best, most successful herd, in the midst of that sort of fighting process, which we've seen from the very beginning of Jacob's character, even before he's born, he's reaching, he's fighting. Here we see that once again now with his father-in-law. And in the midst of this process, we begin to understand that God is not only blessing Jacob, but that in the midst of this really ethically dubious moment, you see that God is making that promise that God made all the way back to Abram in the very beginning, you know, follow me, that in that moment we see Jacob representing the continuation of God's promise. And by the way, this strange breeding thing, right, you got to remember all of the cases and situations in this text where women have been unable to get pregnant. Here, Jacob is a man whose flocks and herds have exceptional and a bountiful birth. So there's this sense in which it's growing rapidly, and this represents a converse view to some of the moments in which, you know, there has been real trouble and drought and famine, all these kinds of things. Here we see that God is blessing this man, and we see that kind of exponential growth, not just in the flocks, but here we had it named in his staff, his camels, his donkeys. Everything is going with this movement.
This is a fun story in this sense. You just have a lot going on. You have an older man who has in the past taken advantage of this younger man. He's also now his father-in-law. You have this text in the beginning, this conversation in the beginning. I want you to stay around because I think that's good for me. I think that I do well when you're here. What do you want? Well, I want this. Well, yeah, you can have that as soon as I make sure to protect myself from it and move the herds. And then you have Jacob succeeding anyway. Now, is it because he's shrewd and knowledgeable? Yes, that's in the text, in the competition between these two men. In this particular instance, Jacob gets on top of Laban. Is it also because God is in the background and what Jacob does is blessed? Yeah, it's not explicitly said, but I think we can read that. It's an interesting text in that there's so many layers relationally. Jacob and Laban, Jacob and God, Laban and God because of Jacob. This is one of those texts where I personally like because it doesn't pin everything down. It leaves it very loose, leaves lots of little inlets for exploration and thinking, lots of little nooks and crannies in a text like this. And I think that makes it, I don't know, that gives it a certain flavor that I appreciate.
Okay, so Clint, I want to be clear here. I'm not suggesting that we should have a conversation about whether we like Jacob or not, mm-hmm. because I don't think that the scriptures are particularly interested in our feelings about the men and women of faith. That said, I can't think that there's many people who name Jacob as their favorite in the book of Genesis, let alone even the whole of the Old Testament. And I think a story like this in some ways is a good illustration of maybe some of the struggle with Jacob, is because he is certainly tricky. We've named that. That's probably a positive framing. But Clint, at some level, don't we have to admit he's also always flirting on the edge of distasteful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm sure there are people who like Jacob, and I think if you're drawn to a character that is not entirely confined by where the lines are of either good taste or morality, if you like the idea of kind of win at all costs, the idea of kind of, you know, you have to take advantage of people to get ahead. If you're attracted to that kind of idea, then I think maybe Jacob is a character that you would appreciate. I find Jacob kind of a difficult character to appreciate. He's bold, he's brash, he's aggressive, he's risk taking, he's fast and loose with everything. I mean, Jacob is the guy who's always going to come out ahead. And I think many of us know some people like that. And if you're attracted to that idea, he's probably an interesting character. I think for most of us, he's a little more like, why'd you pick this guy?
Right.
You know, couldn't we have gotten somebody with a little more?
Well.
But I think that's part of his value, is that he makes us uncomfortable.
He's literally the gateway to the 12.
Right.
We have Jacob, and then he's the father of the 12 tribes, which is really, when you think of it, surprising, really, because you would expect Isaac would be the one who gets all of the press after all of the conversation between God and Abraham. And here we find that Jacob gets all of these chapters. I mean, just a huge portion of chapters with him being tricky at home, fleeing home for his own safety, coming, this whole exchange with his wives and then Laban, and then now we're going to see him repeating that previous behavior and escaping again, and it's going to be two big question marks, what's going to happen. It's fascinating when you see a character like this and you realize how much of this strong-willed, in some cases driven, some cases a very, very stubborn sort of approach to life is going to be mirrored generation to generation in the people of God. And that's not in any way me poking light at the Israelite nation. I mean, fundamentally, I think this is very revealing of our human character. I think this is replicated over and over and over again for a far more universalistic sort of view. It's interesting to look at a person like Jacob, because it's hard to get through his story without at some point thinking that there's a little bit of friction. There's a little bit of a rub with him.
Yeah, I mean, the attraction of Jacob may be that he's a quote-unquote winner. And if you're untroubled by how he wins,
okay, yeah.
then again, he's probably you like him. He's probably a likable character to you. If you feel uncomfortable by how he gets ahead sometimes, as I think most of us do, then it's a more interesting character study. We will have more opportunity to talk about this. We're not done with Jacob's shrewdness yet.
Right. There's more to come. We are glad that you'd be with us on our first day back here, and we will see you tomorrow.
Thanks.